Today's show is Nebraska back. We're getting there. Some big games during the week and kicks for cash scandal at Purdue.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Okay, foam parties versus floating down the river, whatever. I don't know what they're doing.
Ross Dellinger.
Turn to the video, zoom in on this thing, and slow it down.
And SI's Pat Forney.
His mom's name is Midge.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. And I'm not ready to say it's apple picking weekend, but it's kind of. Maybe. It's possibly. It wouldn't be the worst weekend. Not a stellar slate of games. A lot of sneaky good, though. A lot of sneaky good. But and I don't even know if you can pick apples yet. What is that?
See, I think we're early on the apples and we're giving up too easy on this weekend.
It's fair.
Bullish.
I'm not saying, that's why I couldn't say all the way. But you're bullish. I'm excited. There's a lot of sneaky good in here.
Yeah. There's
a lot of sneaky good, so probably not. And those are the weekends when all of a sudden all hell breaks loose.
Yep.
So I'm going with that. I'm just saying, like, you don't have to, like, you know, call the divorce attorney for this one.
Right.
It's not like, if there's a fall wedding, you don't have to kill the groom on this one. Could be worse.
You don't have to circle the wagons and stage a last stand if it comes down to it.
Yes, you're right. Yeah. It's.
But Dan, keep that in your mind on November 9th.
Yeah, I know.
When I'm in a wedding.
In
Lexington, Kentucky, in the biggest regular season weekend of the year. Keep that in mind, and we'll talk about it on the pod.
This is not October 9th. Yes.
No, November 9th.
You're in a wedding. All right. Congratulations.
Yeah, I thought I was too old to be in weddings.
Apparently not. Your deadbeat friends are finally getting married. That's right. Took them a while to jump off.
That's right. And he picks November 9th. Yes.
Yeah.
The biggest regular season weekend of the year.
Yeah. Right. I'm guessing this guy's like 40 or something, late 30s.
41.
Yeah, 41 years, and you still didn't learn, don't do it in the fall?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Come on. I get it. 23-year-old, getting pushed around by the mother, maid of honor, or the mother of the bride. I don't even know the jobs anymore. Come on, man. Come on. So what I want to talk about is what we didn't quite get to yesterday or last show. We talked a little Colorado beating Nebraska. But one thing I wanted to talk about was Nebraska's victory. And you take a deep breath and you look at this Nebraska team, and it is the classic trajectory of a Matt Rhule program. I was looking this up. At Temple, he went 2-10. Then he went 6-6 and then 10-win, 10-win. Then he goes to Baylor, which is involved in a hellacious scandal. He goes 1-11, 7-6, 11-3. Then he goes to Carolina. And Nebraska, we're now at 5-7 and bang, 2-0. And they're staring at a schedule where they've got Northern Iowa. I don't want to play Northern Illinois. Northern Iowa, Illinois, at Purdue, Rutgers, at Indiana. Not simple, but the possibility is there that they are 7-0 heading into Ohio State. And the momentum of this program is going. Recruiting has picked up. They landed the top 100 in-state player this week, beating Oklahoma and Notre Dame. Matt Rhule is very confident. He's a very confident coach. And I think a lot of people in college football have kind of known this name, but he did it at Temple. He did it at Baylor. And then he's always moving before he actually makes a real impact. This is not a guy who's going to move from Nebraska, I don't think. His quote after the game at some point was about the Colorado game, which they won. Was it 28-10 at the end?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But it was at least 28-3 most of the game. I expected the game to go that way. I expected us to score 40 points in that game and hold them to about 10. And he talked about how, all due respect for Colorado, they play hard. He wasn't saying it in a trashy way, but he's confident. Matt Rhule is a confident coach. He is a capable coach. And I think if you're Nebraska or you're the rest of the country that's kind of looking and being like, yeah, Nebraska never really gets good, maybe you got to keep an eye on the Huskers. Pat, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's one of the reasons I think we were all well sold on the hire of Matt Rhule to begin with, because we've seen him do it at places that had less going for them than Nebraska inherently does. And if you can win at Temple and you can win at Baylor, I don't care what happened to the Carolina Panthers. That's a tire fire with him or without him. And he came in to Nebraska, and I think he just brings a competence and an idea of what it takes to win. And then he goes and gets Dylan Raiola. And I like his coaching staff. Tony White's a defensive coordinator who done very good work at Arizona State. Arizona State and Syracuse. And he'd previously had worked under Rocky Long, who, if you know his defensive coaching tree, tends to produce really solid coaches. So you combine the elements there, and it's going to happen. It may happen this year. Maybe this is a little premature. Colorado may stink. They are not a well-constructed football team, so they've beaten Colorado and they've beaten UTEP. So not much really on the resume yet, but they got trucked by Colorado last year. So the year-over-year improvement is pronounced. And I think they're set up here for it could be a really good run into late October. You don't want to get too far ahead of yourselves in the Big Ten. Bielema could throw a surprise at you. Purdue might be better than we think. Rutgers isn't bad. New coach at Indiana. But I could see October 26th, Nebraska at Ohio State being a really interesting game.
Yeah, and I think we kind of – I mean, they were – them and Rutgers, I feel like, were the two kind of sleeper-ish picks, Nebraska and Rutgers, in the Big Ten to maybe make a run or have a better season than expected. I think why many picked Nebraska as that team is because of Rhule's track record that Dan kind of went through. Year two – in year three, he makes incredible improvements, and it just felt like, you know, I don't know. It's weird. It just kind of felt like a guarantee with him that he's going to win there. I don't know why, but I did visit there a few months ago, and, you know, I think you guys have both been there, but like they have this brand new facility they just opened, and it is incredible. It will wow you. It's beautiful. They have they got all the tools, right? They've got all the resources. They've got the fans, interest and the passionate fan base like they do. They're the only thing in town, quite literally, only thing in state, quite literally. And so they just needed that coach, and I think they got it. I think he was the hire of the 22-23 cycle. Matt Rhule was he was the guy, and now we're seeing it come to fruition. And the expectation was obviously high around the offense with Raiola and all that. But I know they just played UTEP in Colorado, but it was like two touchdowns in two games. And it does appear that the old black shirts might be back, Dan.
Black shirts might be back, and I don't even really know about this year. I don't know if they can get to 7-0. That's a lot to ask a team that's on it. Like, you can sit there and go, oh, they should be favored in those games, but it's hard to put those week to week together. Like you said, Illinois, Purdue, Rutgers are not, and maybe even Indiana, those are not like, this isn't Ohio State playing those guys.
Right. Yeah.
I haven't been this bullish on Nebraska since not long after they entered the Big Ten. And you started to see the recruiting shift, and they weren't getting the players because they do have everything there. It is an incredible place to see a game. The campus is great. The fans are unbelievable. There's now NIL money everywhere, both legit. We'll get to that. Legitimate NIL, because you're Dylan Raiola is the biggest star in the state of Nebraska. Okay, like Dylan, if you are legitimately own a business in Nebraska, you want Dylan Raiola hawking your cars, hawking your financial services, whatever it is, you want that guy in your commercial. Not fake, real NIL. But there's also the other NIL, because they're going to make their, you know, they got all the money. They've got everything you want. Their problem was proximity to players. And they were able to do it for a long time. But when they got to the Big Ten, it all shifted. They were trying all sorts of gimmicks. Calabrasca, they would try to get all these kids from California that were willing to go to Nebraska. Those guys tended to be guys that weren't really all that good.
Because those two places are so similar.
I know. It was like a marketing concept. And you're like, and I remember like a West Coast guy, like, yeah, those are the guys that USC and going after, right?
Yeah.
Because you can just be Calabrasca in California. Mm-hmm. But you're getting these guys. They were trying a lot of different things. Pelini was a good coach, but not enough. And he kind of was a little rough around the edges. So
borderline insane. Yeah.
I think we did this once where it's like, who was the guy that transferred from Michigan basketball to Kansas? Dickinson.
Yeah.
And he said, Kansas is the real Midwest. They're nice. And I was like, Bo Pelini is technically from the Midwest. He's from Youngstown, Ohio. And I applaud it because I live in Metro Detroit, like mean as hell, right? And then there's Nebraska. Like there's nothing in common between a Nebraska and what's going on in Youngstown, Ohio.
No,
they're the Midwest, but it's not the same thing. Anyway, the problem was like, okay, you took the money, you found stability because the Big 12 was, you know, Texas and Oklahoma almost left with back then without even telling Nebraska. So you found your stability, but you never had something where I was like, okay, this is going to work. Rule comes in. I'm like, this might work. And early returns is like, I want to see this team next year, 2 years. They could be really good. This program could get really, really good to where it is a legit. They got to thread a needle here for the playoff, but next year they might not, the year after. And if I'm a Nebraska fan, I am over the moon at that concept that we're not ever going to be what they were, where you're just winning 40 games in a row and stuff, but we're relevant again, and we're going to get more relevant.
Yeah. I mean, that the fact is Dylan Rayola is going to be there for 2 more years, you know, unless something weird happens. So that's a wonderful building block right there. And you think if he's going to pan out to be as good as it appears he can be, you're going to be bringing in receivers. You're going to be getting linemen. You're going to, the skill positions and all the offensive players will probably follow. And Matt Rhule almost always has a good defense too. So the combinations are all there. And as you said, Dan, yes, once they start, once they're tasting success now, they continue to taste it. Those fans got an appetite. The NIL train will keep rolling for whatever they feel like they need to put around Dylan Rayola.
Yeah, they're crazy there. Like I said, it's just there's not a whole lot else going on. They are the only show in the state and in the city, and they rally behind them. Dan kind of mentioned the schedule, and yeah, I mean they have a good shot of being favored, in every game up until Ohio State. You know, I think they get Rutgers, and you know they get them at home, and then they have a bye before they have to go to Indiana, which could be an interesting one. We've seen Cignetti and them scoring a lot of points, and so that should be interesting. But yeah, very real possibility of being 7-0, and then the schedule gets just brutal, right? It's Ohio State, and they got USC and Wisconsin, and then at Iowa in there. But I mean, you go 8-4, I think that's a pretty solid year too. And that's what, if you look at the schedule, a 9-3, 8-4 is, I think, a real possibility.
I'm unnecessarily excited about Nebraska, Illinois.
I am too.
Not Nebraska, Rutgers. I'm starting to get fired up. Wow, Nebraska, Rutgers visit. It's going to be good. Yeah.
Friday night. It's a Friday night game.
It's a Friday night game in Lincoln.
Yeah.
I Bielema is a good coach. He's all proven that. And that was a good win over Kansas the other night. And they they've got Luke Altmaier's played better than expected at quarterback. They could put together another one of those years like they did when they were 8-5 and knocking off some people.
Yeah, if there was like a footballaholics meeting, I'd be like, I think I'm an alcoholic or footballaholic. I'm already thinking ahead to the Nebraska Rutgers game.
Yeah.
And they'd be like,
yeah, you got a problem, Dan. You got a problem.
You might need inpatient, brother. You might need inpatient.
Treatment center. Yes.
Yeah. Treatment center. We're going to get to the house settlement here. One more. Marcus Freeman. More comments after the disaster at against Northern Illinois. He's said they got a big head, basically. This is the first time in my 3 years as head coach that we won the big game early in the season. Two losses to Ohio State, then all of a sudden we win, and everyone says, hey, you're going to the playoffs. You got an easy schedule. We all hear it. I think we started to believe it. There's a physical approach to preparing for game, and I think physically we prepared the right way. There's also a mental approach and a mindset that you have to have every single week, and I think that's where we failed. Honest assessment. I would also say after Pat, after you trounced me in Northern Illinois takes the other day, beware. You're going to start thinking you got a big head and you need to mentally prepare. I took my lick. I was not good on Northern Illinois. You were. So be careful. I just want to listen to Coach Freeman. Ross, what do you think of Coach Freeman being that honest about it? He kind of is throwing himself in there on that list.
You know, one thing with him, even like with all these losses, we've talked about the Marshall loss, the Stanford loss, Louisville last year. He has been like that. Like he's just kind of out there. He's one of the nicer guys in the business, coaches wise, and will make time for you, and is very, very kind, and he's very, very honest. He doesn't hide behind any any players or any one play or a coach's decision. He takes the blame. He's done that in the past, and that's great and all. But if you take the blame too many times for too many bad losses, then you'll be looking at the old pink slip.
Take the blame, take the buyout.
Yeah,
that's the other one too, which they really played well, but the Ohio State game when they had 10 guys on the field the last two plays, that's a tough one. But yes, he's owned up. I think he's owned all of their losses, and without having been around them last week, I would suspect he's exactly right that they did win their first big game early in quite a while, come back from Texas, start hearing all the hosannas, and everybody's, basically penciled them into the playoff, and guess what? You better come back and play the next week. So my one Northern Illinois fact Dan.
There we go. I got to pile on. Yeah. You can't score an extra points after the loss. I took the loss.
Yes, no, but we're still rewinding the game tape to look at the glory. Mm. No, I think you'll appreciate this. Ethan Hampton, the quarterback for Northern Illinois, from Elburn, Illinois. His mom's name is Midge. If that isn't a Midwestern mom's name, I don't know what is. Midge Hampton, proud of your son.
Midge Hampton. Okay,
Midge.
All right. See, Pat, awesome. I see Ross. Is that just, isn't that mean of him? Kind of just throwing extra.
He's cruel. He's a mean old man, Dan.
I could go, like on social media and put some sort of snarky meme up there about it.
That's true.
No, that's
good. All right. Well, she did a great job raising her son. Great win. Future college athletics at stake here. We're going to talk about it right after this break. House case. Now, this is a major case about how we are going to compensate athletes going forward. And they came up with this settlement, or they came up with this agreement last spring. I'm going to have Ross explain it in more detail. Basically, that was going to allow direct payment to players, but then try to curb or eliminate collectives, NIL payments that weren't real, quote unquote, real NIL. There was all sorts of bureaucratic functions going to be created to define that. There was a whole different way. And I personally was always skeptical that this was legal. And we got to Judge Wilkins, the federal judge who's handled a lot of NCAA stuff over the years, starting back with the O'Bannon case. I think she heard the O'Bannon case. She said, get back to the drawing board on parts of this, mainly trying to limit people's ability to make money without negotiating with them to do that. Ross, where are we at with this? Explain this to me like I'm five.
Yeah.
And that means only a couple sentences because I can only understand.
Yes.
I can't pay attention very long.
Well, right now, Dan, as you kind of mentioned there, right now, players, for the most part, are getting paid through boosters, outside entities, and booster collectives. And it's something somewhat made legal by the NCAA, name, image, likeness made legal, and boosters are disguising payments and as name, image, and likeness as endorsement deals. So what the settlement, the main point of the settlement, the core central part of the settlement is to shift the money that's coming from boosters to athletes to schools to athletes. So schools directly compensating athletes instead of the boosters. So the whole point is to eliminate all of the deals being disguised as endorsement deals with athletes on the outside from boosters and just keep the real endorsement deals from brands and businesses and companies, things like that, and then have the direct compensation come from the school. And the judge took exception to the fact that in the settlement, there is a clause prohibiting booster pay if it is not, quote, real NIL or true NIL. And she took exception to the enforcement, a new enforcement entity, which we've written about a lot, which would police boosters and any outside NIL by having outside deals run through a clearinghouse and be cleared by a third-party entity. The NCAA's already, NCAA and Power Conferences, this is all Power Conference-driven, a lot of this, as far as the outside third-party NIL deals. They've already met with companies to oversee this, to police this. She took exception to that. And part of the reason she took exception is right now, the money's coming from the boosters. As she knew, she's read up on all this stuff. She seems to know what's going on in the booster world and how much athletes are getting paid. And so she took exception to the cap, because schools are going to pay athletes now and they'll have a cap, basically a salary cap. And there's no cap right now, right? So she took exception to that, she's assuming that athletes will potentially lose money. She said multiple times, taking away something from people is not a smart idea. But the real thing, Dan, is I don't know if athletes really will have money taken away from them. I don't know that she understands exactly how this is going to work, which is another whole part of this and is an issue, is her maybe lack of understanding of some things.
Shots fired by Justice Delegate. I mean, you are one of the three justices on the People's Court.
Dan, she entered the hearing with the understanding, her understanding that pay for play, the longtime NCAA rule prohibiting pay for play, was being eliminated, which is nowhere in the settlement. Nowhere in the settlement. She entered the hearing with that understanding. And I kind of get what she's talking about, right? Because in the settlement, it obviously says the schools can pay the athletes. And let's just be honest, the schools are going to pay the athletes to play, right? They're paying the athletes to retain them, to recruit them, to play. But she doesn't understand that the NCAA, in order to try to keep competitive equity, I think, is trying to police the outside phony booster deals. And she kind of thinks, I just from based on what she said, she believes, well, you're gonna allow the schools to pay them to play. Everybody should be able to have the option to pay them to play. And there's certainly free market folks out there who would agree. Dan, you probably agree.
Yeah, I get that.
That's one side of the argument. College leaders don't feel that
They're
way.
Not
right?
free
they
market.
Feel,
yeah.
They do not feel that boosters in outside third parties should be able to come on top of the pay that schools are getting and disrupt what they are trying to seek, which is some kind of competitive equity and competitive balance. So now we are at an impasse, and the judge says change this clause or strike it completely from the settlement, this third party situation, or else. And that's where we are. They have 3 weeks to report back to her on if they will change or remove that portion of the settlement.
Right. September 26th, I think, right, is the next hearing or whatever in this. You know, this is kind of a new next iteration, it seems to me, of what has always been the NCAA's stance since NIL first was conceived of, we're still going to try to thread this little needle over here so that it's not what it really is. You know, we're not going to quite just flat out pay the athletes. No, first, it's, you know, it's got to be legitimate NIL opportunities as opposed to pay for play. Well, that absolutely got trampled and has not been enforceable. And now we've got a massive settlement that can clear the way for everything going forward. But we still want to try to thread it where the booster money isn't going directly from them to the athletes. And time and time again, their precepts keep getting crushed in court. And I guess they just want to keep getting crushed. I don't really see a way where you win this. This, you know, this is like the losing army where you just keep retrenching and keep retrenching and keep retreating, but we still are going to try to hold the capital, and they're still coming for the capital, man. Eventually, you got to give up the capital and pay the players. And I, you know, I'm not saying this is going to be the best solution. I'm not saying it's the only solution, but you got to at some point surrender to what's clearly happening in front of you.
Guard rails. Guard rails. Yeah, look, this isn't the best solution at all. This isn't what I would look for. I think a while ago I argued you need to try to go to Congress and come up with a system where you're very much like the International Olympic Committee, which is one of the few organizations more corrupt, far more corrupt, I would say, than the NCAA, or detestable, or, but the IOC sits there and says, we put on the Olympics. Come play at the Olympics, make as much money as you would like. We don't pay Simone Biles. We don't pay Katie Ledecky. We don't pay Stephen Curry. But the fame they get off of that, the platform we provide, they can make lots and lots of money. And so, like last year, somewhat famously, Caitlin Clark did not take money from the actual Iowa Collective. She sure took the money from State Farm and all that, Gatorade and all that. Now, at one point, this was the problem with the NCAA, because they just could not see more than 2 inches in front of the face. They said, and they fought all the way to the Supreme Court, that if Caitlin Clark comes along and is in a State Farm commercial, it will so turn off the fans that our entire system will collapse and we'll have nobody watching the games anymore. This was clearly one of the dumbest arguments of all time, yet they argued it in front of the Supreme Court. So to Pat's point, they're always fighting a losing battle. That doesn't make any sense. So what they needed to do a while ago was go and say, we got to figure out how to get Congress to say, all right, that makes sense. Make all the money you want, guys. It's like a restaurant. We pay them 10 bucks an hour, 15 bucks an hour. But if you tip them, you tip them. Customers tip. You work it out. But instead, they're trying and trying and trying to come up with more guardrails to go back to that same mentality of we have to control it. It wouldn't be fair. Caitlin Clark would be a millionaire, and the woman she's playing against would not. That, and they were fighting against free markets. They're fighting against capitalism, fighting against America. It's just not going to work, and this isn't going to work. So what I just look at this as it's just that continuation, and they've now boxed themselves in where they want to pay, which I would have done everything I could to not. To me, the only solution here and the only solution that they're going to get done, and again, I don't love this. I would have loved the other system, but they didn't listen to me, was you got to make these guys employees, and then you have to negotiate with the union and say you're not allowed to do this. We saw this year in the WNBA. The Las Vegas Tourism Commission, or whatever, Visit Las Vegas, whatever the thing's called, tried to give every member of the Las Vegas Aces money as part of like a promotion. They tried to give them all. And it's kind of like NIL. Instead of, they weren't doing real work, and the WNBA was able to come in and say, no, you're not allowed to do that, because that's been collectively bargained. Now, if Aja Wilson wants to get in a Gatorade commercial, which she probably is, that's fine, right? So you can maybe do that, but you have to collectively bargain, and they haven't collectively bargained. You have to recognize a union, and yet there's no union. So how do you get past that? I don't know. And that's why I think this settlement never made any sense to me. They're like, we got this all worked out. And it's like, you forgot labor.
Well, yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I think there are probably a lot of administrators out there that after this, and some of them even before this, would agree with you, Dan, would agree that it is time, we're here, we got to just collectively bargain, bite the bullet. This is the only way. I've heard from a few, certainly before the hearing, but there were plenty that after the hearing were like, okay, I'm finally in agreement. We've got to do this. And there are certainly a lot of folks that I quoted a university president in my story last week from the hearing about, hey, if we have to change that language, it basically defeats the purpose of the settlement, policing the third parties. If we can't do that, it defeats the purpose, and we'll just go to trial and we'll take our risk on appeal and see if we get lucky on appeal, and you'll go up to the Supreme Court, and this thing drags on 3, 4, 5 years. You know, there's going to be a lot of other changes, and you never know what can happen, right? And that's where we are. There's certainly a serious movement right now to not change a thing in the clause, and to represent it to the judge and see what she says, maybe give her further clarity around things and explain a little more around things. And then the second part is have your plaintiff attorneys who agreed to the settlement terms, not in the middle of a hearing, as one of them did last week, tell the judge, we can change the terms. We'll be on board to change the terms. Dan, that wasn't great for the NCAA's argument in the power conference argument to have the plaintiff attorney who'd originally agreed on the terms to, in the middle of the hearing, want to legislate and change the terms in front of the judge.
Yeah, they're going to get a better deal.
That wasn't great.
They're going to get a better deal. You go to a car dealer, and the manager says, well, maybe 10% less. You don't go, I agreed to full price, man. I don't want to screw this salesman out of his commission.
Kessler's whole thing has basically been like, look, we don't really care where the money comes from as long as we're getting the money, right?
Yeah, I mean, right.
So, like, he's not been very concerned, it doesn't seem, about structure and policy and rules as long as the money gets paid. Ross, my question, so I don't know whether we have any clarity on this yet, but the most important voices in college sports, the commissioners, especially the one who lives in Birmingham, and Charlie Baker and his folks in the NCAA, how malleable are they on this? I know there's some presidents saying, hell no, we won't budge, but do you have any sense from the Ruther power centers what they're thinking?
Yeah, it's kind of early. In fact, they just, I think they just got the transcript of the hearing, because, you know, it was illegal to record the hearing, so you have to wait on the transcript. So they just got the transcript, so we're pretty in the early going. I'm assuming lawyers right now are pouring over the transcript and pouring over her words and every word that she used to try to decipher, number one, what she's saying, and number two, how they could argue when they have another hearing, how they can argue or further explain or clarify to her. So it is too early, I think. But I mean, you know, Pat, I mean, the NCAA president and the power conference commissioners, which, you know, are the five people, Brett Yormark, Greg Sankey, Tony Petitti, Jim Phillips, and Charlie Baker, are the five that were in the room negotiating this settlement. And each of them have a board, you know, to answer to. And those boards in the conference levels are university presidents. And imagine we'll have a lot of university president meetings this week and next week to try to figure out where everybody is and what the path is. And, you know, there are a few options here. I think number one is not to touch anything, not to do anything, and represent it tour and get your plaintiff's attorneys on board to say, you agreed to this. We're sticking to this. You have to fight in front of the judge. You have to fight for what you agreed to and fight to keep the language as is. So that's option one. Option two is to tweak the language. Can you remove booster out of that clause? Can you make it a little more vague? Now, doing that, you'll make it in a way where you can't enforce it. I don't know if you're going to be able to enforce it anyway, especially given what the judge said. Even if this settlement goes through, Dan, I don't know if they can ever enforce this based on what she said, right? And I think we all knew this was going to be an issue. But can you make it vague enough to get it through and then you take it from there? And then, of course, option three is not even to show up to the hearing and just say, we're done. Like, we're done. We'll go to trial. We're not even going to try. I don't know. I'm guessing they're going to go with one of the first two
spillable
options.
Spillable hours. You know, to show but, up. To show yeah. up. Yeah, no one gets paid if you don't show up for work. Yeah. Well, look, this is a major issue. Go ahead, Pat. What did you going to say? I think you had thoughts.
No, I was just like, if they actually draw this thing out and it takes till 2029 or whatever, you know, if they go to court and then before they lose, the happiest people on earth right now are like men's cross country runners and wrestlers. Your sports are probably going to be saved for the next 6 years.
That's true.
But everybody else, look out.
Yeah. By the way, there's no option four, right? The option four would be to completely strike that, the third party stuff, and remove it from the settlement. I would be stunned, right, if that were to happen. It would be the whole goal of the settlement. As several people have said to me the last few days, why are we paying the back pay and why are we agreeing to pay the forward pay, the revenue share, if we don't get the protection from the booster pay and third party? So that's not
going to happen. Pay directly. Just open it up and let the cat, it's out. It's out. It's done. Like, this is
just have it like it is now. Right.
Yes. Yeah, basically. Okay. It's the Wild West. No one's going to watch. No, this is horrible. The competitive balance. We haven't seen any of their fear monger. None of it happened. Next year. Oh, it's going to be next year. We aren't seeing this. Every argument they came up with on why we had to do all these elaborate things, they have no chance of trying to define what a legitimate NIL is. And you have no chance of stopping somebody, one American, from giving money to another American. You can't sit there in a town and say, well, I want to hire this kid down the street to mow my lawn. And someone says, well, you can only pay him $50. Well, I want to pay him $60. Well, you can't do that. Well, the babysitter, I want to pay $20 an hour. You can't. It doesn't work. You can't sit there. It's not going to work. They've tried it. The states will come in and sue it. Maybe you get it past this deal, but you're not going to get it past the next. Like, it just doesn't. They've got to come up with something better. And just believing that more bureaucracy, more compliance departments, more rules, more this, more that, it's never it. Like, deregulate, man. Deregulate. Running for president. Nobody. There's no more free market people out there anymore. I get it. I'm the last one. The last one in favor of deregulation. It's over. But whatever. There's a few of us. Somebody out there is nodding their head with me. What are we doing? Well,
there's another, you know, benefit of going to trial is that it would take so long, as I mentioned earlier. I mean, in the appeals process, all the way potentially the Supreme Court, it'd be like 5 years. And there's a lot that can change, obviously, in college athletics and in just 5 months, let alone 5 years. And you can imagine the congressional lobbying will continue. And depending on how the elections go, right, you could get help from Congress at some point. I mean, going to trial is not just, it could be also a delay tactic.
It might be their best move for what they're trying to accomplish. Brett Kavanaugh ain't going anywhere. He's got a lifetime.
But others on the court might. Anyway,
go ahead.
Yes, the landscape could change to a more favorable landscape. But yes, I would still hate to ultimately throw this in front of the Supreme Court and say, hey, I know you crushed us 9-0 a few years ago, but what do you sweat? Yeah. Maybe you reconsider.
Even having Jeffrey Kessler, the attorney, is one of the smartest people I've ever spoken to in my life. He's been around sports law. He is an absolute genius of a guy. But having a Jeffrey Kessler in there making a decision on how college athletics is going to work. Do we going to support this? We're going to ask for a better deal when he has a massive amount of money in this settlement going through.
Conflict. I
mean, talk about your, NIL. They're getting like 30, 40. What, I mean, how much money is he making off this deal?
Well, I mean, they requested close to $500 million.
Yeah.
That's and, the request up front. That does not include
his law firms. The
1%. They want 1% going forward each year. They want 1% of how much, however much schools share revenue. They want a 1% cut of that. If you
it's
do
a
the
multi-level
math,
marketing
it's around,
deal, what is this?
It's potentially $1 billion.
Right. It's so astronomical. I mean,
that's
it's just
the guy representing one side. This I got all the respect in the world for Jeffrey Kessler, right? Yeah. He could come on here and he would eliminate me in my debate, but that's not a good system. Of course he wants to settle. He's got $1 billion coming.
Well, and let's how about this? Now, and the judge brought all, well, the judge didn't bring up the specifically the attorney fees and the amounts, but she did, they did talk a lot about the conflict, right? And that's a, the whole conflict was a worry going into the trial by for many that negotiated this, that that would be brought up, and she did. But of course, that got overshadowed by everything we've talked about. But the, she definitely brought up the conflict piece of this.
Yeah, I'd say. All right, we'll be back after this message. All right, enough with all the money talk in the future. Let me tell you the future, okay? Thursday night, San Marcos, Texas, there's going to be a lot of drunk people. There's going to be a lot of drunk people. And maybe that's true every Thursday
night.
This
is a regular Thursday night in San Marcos.
Right. Yeah. San Marcos, you know, they get after it.
Yes. Nationally televised Thursday night game. The Thursday night games were once like, I don't know, maybe it's memories that are making it more like there was always a great Thursday night game. But there used to be, I think, really good Thursday night games, as I recall. And now the NFL does Thursday night. But I just don't like watching on streaming. I don't like streaming because I can't change the channel. And so I don't know who's playing on the NFL game, but I don't watch that Thursday night NFL game very much. It was my problem watching Oregon Boise State the other night on Peacock. You're stuck watching one game, and I want to click around, right? But this one's going to be on ESPN. Arizona State 2-0, coming off a huge win, big night against Mississippi State. Kenny Dillingham's program is really moving, and they're going to play Texas State, which is an excellent program, and they're 2-0, and they've got things moving, and it's going to be in the 30,000-seat stadium down there at Texas State in San Marcos, Texas. San Marcos is about halfway between Austin and San Antonio, probably a little closer to Austin. Fantastic town. Great campus, kind of tucked up on this hill. They have all these, tubing is big there, I think.
Oh, the river float.
Yeah.
River float. Yeah. This is one of the great party schools in America. And I'm sure there's great academics also. I don't, you know, don't say that in a bad way. I mean, whatever. And they got ESPN coming. And they got an Arizona State game that should be really fun. They got a Power 4 opponent coming. And, I mean, look, if we're going to put party school rankings, Texas State, Arizona State, I mean, this is the Bama-Georgia game here.
Oh, boy.
This is Bama-Georgia.
Yeah.
Okay, foam parties versus floating down the river, whatever. I don't know what they're doing at Arizona State anymore. But this is a really fun game between two fun programs that could use a little bit of pop. And I, again, footballaholics, am excited for this game. Pat, what do you think?
Absolutely. This is where college football is fun, you know, where a program pops up and all of a sudden has their biggest home game in history, without question. Arizona State is coming in. And you're on ESPN, and it's basically a standalone game. And, yeah, you get squashed by the NFL, but who cares? There's still going to be a lot of people tuning in to watch Texas State and say, what is Texas State about? And so it is a huge opportunity for them, and the excitement, I'm sure, will be through the roof this week. G.J. Kinney, the coach there, has gone maybe even more portal-heavy than Deion Sanders. I mean, they have portaled hard to turn that thing around. And they've got guys from all over. Their quarterback, Jordan McLeod, This is his school itinerary. 2019 and 2020, South Florida. 2021, Arizona. 2022, I guess he didn't get the automatic second transfer, James Madison. Now 2024, Texas State. So fourth school in 6 years for Jordan McLeod.
What a list. What a list.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, he's got schools. He knows what's up.
He sure does. Yeah. Arizona, South Florida, James Madison. I'm sure they can get after
this kid has had a hell of a fun time in college.
Yeah, he has. Maybe even get a degree. I don't know. But so, you know, they have really worked the system hard at Texas State to get things going. And for them to absolutely destroy UTSA, which has been pretty darn good in their second game, beat them 49-10, tells me, look out. They kind of got this thing turned and ready. And I think Arizona State, which we talked about in the overreaction pod, fantastic start to the season for them. They've crushed Wyoming. They handled Mississippi State easily. They played with their hair on fire against Mississippi State. And I have to correct my pronunciation. Cam Scataboo, not Scatabo. Their running back, Doug Tamaro, corrected me on that. So Scataboo, who ran for 260. He's very fun to watch. Him against Texas State. Tune in.
Two for two with Tamaro. Two pods in a row. He's got a streak going.
He's going to get the – talk about getting the big head.
He's going to get – be careful. Listen to Coach Freeman there, Doug. Listen to Coach Freeman. Two mentions on the College Football Inquirer is much like beating Texas A&M down in College Station.
Rat poison.
This is – I think his first year, G.J. Kinney, Pat, they had like 60 new players, maybe 70 new players at first year. It was similar. I remember doing the math of him in Colorado, Dion's first year and his first year, and combined they had like 150 new players between the two programs, sign of the times. But yeah, they have mined the transfer portal. I was shocked by the UTSA score. Pat mentioned it, 49-10. Did not see that coming. McLeod, the quarterback, had a good game, threw over 300 yards, a couple of touchdowns. Yeah, I did not see that coming. And as Dan mentioned, Arizona State's off to a hell of a start, and maybe they can keep it going. This is a really exciting matchup. I don't know exactly why Arizona State chose to go on the road to Texas State, but I'm guessing it was a 2-for-1. I'm guessing Texas State will come back to play in Phoenix twice, but I'm not sure what the series is there. But I mean, that's a scary. I mean, not a scary place. I shouldn't say that. But
I think it's gonna be scary. It's gonna be third. They're gonna be jammed.
They're gonna be jammed.
They're gonna be
lubed up,
floating down the river all day.
That's right.
Screaming all night. These are the reigning first responder bowl champs here.
That's right.
Okay. Let's not. Texas State is visiting in 2025. Maybe they already visited. I somehow missed that game. Anyway, exciting. One more weeknight game, because sometimes we're going to talk Alabama and all these other games, Alabama, Wisconsin, all these other games, because we're talking about drinking, and the Wisconsin fan is already getting like, they're like, wait, hands up. Like, you do know Bama's coming this weekend to Madison. Well, tell me about this little fun belt bit. But Texas State can punch well above the group of five. You don't want any part of that. But Friday night, so we'll talk about all that, but a lot of people listen on Saturday morning and stuff like that. UNLV's visiting Kansas. UNLV has played really well so far, including a pretty impressive victory over Houston, who ended up giving Oklahoma a really good game. You know, you got to piece this stuff together, particularly group of five. But they're visiting Kansas, which is coming off a loss at Illinois. Game is at the soccer stadium in Kansas City because KU and is building a new stadium, looks like Northwestern. Interesting quality game on Friday night. And what I like about it, and this is, I think I thought this would happen, but I'm already into it. Like, you're trying to read the tea leaves on which group of five team can make a statement so at the end of the year they could be in the playoff. And UNLV is certainly a team with that potential. That's why Boise State's game against Oregon was so interesting, because you're not really thinking Boise State's going to win the national championship. But hey, if they had beaten Oregon, they'd be in that driver. Northern Illinois, whatever. So very good opportunity here. I think that's going to be a great game. Kansas hosting UNLV. Pat?
Sure do. Yes, UNLV has been very impressive so far. Two games. Barry Odom has done immediately really good work there last year and so far this year. And yeah, Kansas coming off a, you know, probably pretty disappointing loss, and they're playing in this weird stadium setup, as you noted. I don't know how many of their students are actually going to the games in suburban Kansas City, and you know whether they're creating any sort of home field atmosphere there or not. But if you're UNLV, it's a huge opportunity to jump into the playoff derby for sure. And real quick, I just looked at Texas State's roster. I've got at least 64-year transfers on the roster. Incarnate Word might as well be their farm team. They've got guys from Incarnate Word.
That's where he came from, right? That's where.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Right. Maybe more than six.
All right. I got a people's court for us. This is really a real one, too. So put your big boy thinking hats on. This is just straight scandal. And it involves Purdue. Sneaky scandal school.
Sneaky scandal
school. No, the drum is safe. I mean, we know what honesty, we know what, maybe that plays into it because there's a little more trickery here. All right.
Dan's longstanding issues with Purdue bubbling under the surface here.
All right. You know, I mean, they say it's the biggest drum. It ain't the biggest drum. It just isn't. I don't know what else to say. I'm right. They're wrong. This is case closed. I don't need Claudia Wilkin to tell me what's going on.
All right. She might.
Zachary Spangler, he is our hero, at least my hero in this. You guys can pick whoever you want on this side. I'm reading this from the Purdue Exponent, the student paper there, who did a bang-up job on this story. Great work.
Great work. Very well.
Yes. Will Doughton. Excellent work. Spangler is, this story this is a very Purdue story. He is a farm management major. Of course, he gets picked on Saturday's game to participate in the kicks for cash competition during the football game. And he is supposed to kick a 20-yard field goal, a 30-yard field goal, and a 40-yard field goal within 30 seconds. Okay. Got to hit all three. And if you do, you don't actually win cash. You get a two-year lease on a car from, Roman Honda. Okay. Roman Honda is going to give you a free car for 2 years to wheel around, a lease. So Spangler hits the 20, hits the 30, and then hits the 40. And the place goes crazy, right? Of course. Kid got a free car. Everyone's excited. He is announced as the winner of the car. They take down his information. And then they go to the video replay review. His 40-yard kick was not, toe did not meet leather until 5/100ths of a second past the 30-second mark. That's how much they analyze this thing. 5/100ths of a second, 30 seconds and 5/100ths of a second. He kicks the 40-yarder. It is ruled no good. He does not get the car. Spangler's
Boo.
As in a great college student paper quote, Spangler said he and his friend's immediate reaction was, quote, "That's bullshit."
Yeah. Perfect.
Now, Spangler has a side argument here. Clearly, if you look at the videotape, now he's saying the videotape is grainy. Do we really, in 5/100ths, do we know? Or not, I guess it's not like the, you know, progressive pylon cam that's doing a good job or whatever. It's this kind of grainy footage, surveillance footage. But his point is the holder of the ball put it on the tee with 1.5 seconds left. And that should count as the snap. Because all you got to do in a football game is snap the ball before 0-0-0. You don't have to kick it. And so he's arguing that angle. That is one of his arguments on this.
And got a little Jeffrey Kessler in him, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. Spangler needs to move to lawyer. He's a pre-law.
Right. Forget that, ag science, man.
That would count if you're 12 years old up until you're 38 years old. Adam Vinatieri was kicking into the 40s, so Spangler doesn't. Great Colts kicker. Come on, Spangler. I was never told that the ball had to be off my foot before the 30 seconds because they were like, hey, just go out there and kick. So the Honda people are saying no. Obviously, on the other side, the Honda people probably had an insurance company on this, and they're saying no. Anyway, this is the situation. Justice 40. Who the heck? Should Spangler get the car, or is Bob Roman Honda properly enforcing the rules? The rules are the rules, and you didn't get it done, son.
Spangler should get the car, should get the ownership of the dealership,
ooh,
and take over the damn thing from these crooks, these weasels, these dishonest schmucks who found an insurance guy sitting in a cubicle to say, oh, no, it's 5/100 to a second late. Let's weasel out of this deal. You're going to get so much more bad publicity than you could have gotten good publicity if you're Roman Honda. And I saw the email from Trey Roman. Yes, we're calling you out, Trey. Come on. Deprive a college kid? This is hard to do. Can you kick a 20-yarder, a 30-yarder, and a 40-yarder in 30 seconds? Most of us could not make one. He makes all three, and he's 5/100ths of a second allegedly late? Oh, my God. Boo on the dealership. Yeah. Go, Spangler. Take him down. Get your car.
Yeah, boo indeed. You know, they were sitting around, these people, maybe the insurance company, the people at the dealership, like, no way this kid makes it, right? No way, you know? Right. And then he does it, and they've just got to be like, oh, let's turn to the video and zoom in on this thing and slow it down. Boo, 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 man. This is bad, yeah.
You ever see the one at the basketball games where they make the guy putt a ball all the way down the court?
Yeah.
So it's a, 94 feet on wood, and it goes in the little, it's an impossible shot. I mean, I don't care.
I've seen a guy do it.
I've seen a couple make it.
They actually make it somehow. Yeah. Like Scottie Scheffler could sit there for an hour and not hit that shot. But it, you know, so you feel like you're pretty good. Give him the car. Come on, man. Give him the car. Bob, how many Hondas you selling in Lafayette? You need this? You need everyone against you?
Yeah. All of a sudden, rules now the nation, rules. The nation is going rallying against Roman Honda.
Let me tell you something. I will never buy a Honda from Roman Honda in Lafayette, Indiana. I will never do it. That's it. Lifetime boycott from me. Wow, take that. You just lost a potential customer. You don't know. I could have been down there checking out the drum, measuring the drum, saying, my car breaks down. I need to go over. Hey, look at the Honda dealership. No, come on. Worth noting, Spangler says he already has a car and he doesn't even need the car. I kind of like this guy. Okay, he said, I got a car. And he said he isn't upset about losing the lease. Rather, he's frustrated that his 40-yard field goal doesn't count. Quote, I have a car that runs just fine. I'm just more upset about I hit a 40-yarder, and they're saying I didn't because it came off my foot 5/100ths of the second. Spangler plays for the love of the game, Pat. The love of the game. The team.
He's a purist.
The team. Yeah. The team. You'll never play for a team again. You'll play for a contract. You'll play for a pro. This is the most Big Ten story of all time. Except it shouldn't be Honda. It should be like a Chevy dealership. But whatever, other than that.
Yeah, this should be a Chevy Malibu on the line here.
Chevy Malibu. I mean, doesn't they got like a used car laying around that could make a deal? Like, listen, we got like an 86 Yugo here that some old lady put. Take that.
Spangler's hit all the right notes on this, that's for sure. He made the kicks and then he gave all the good quotes and he's got a bright future, whether it's in ag econ or something else. Ag science. I'm in favor of Spangler. I want him to get all the cars.
Small sample Heisman, Zachary Spangler. Yeah. You got that. That's all we got for you. That's all we got. All right. That's our show. We will be back Thursday. We're going to talk all the big games this weekend. And there are some good ones. And we appreciate everyone listening, sharing us on social media, telling your friends about it. And we will talk to you later.